Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We are excited to have a conversation about a new practice, a new facility and asset when it comes to behavioral health here in Erie. And we're going to talk about it here. It's at AHN St. Vincent. Nina Ferraro, the Director of Behavioral Health, is with us. Nina, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Joel. Nice to see you again. Nice
you got it. And we've got Dr. Anthony Manarino, PhD, professor and chair and director of the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents and the Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Institute, Allegheny Health Network. Dr. Manarino, appreciate you coming on the show.
Pleasure to be on the show, Joel.
All righty. So let's get started here. Now, Nina, with all of your years at AHN, you've carried this knowledge base about behavioral health your entire career, because this is what you got your degrees in, right?
I kept that in my back pocket. Yes, that was just a lens I was able to view the community with when I was out doing the community work. Yeah.
And tell us about how things started for AHN to kind of go into this field beyond what typical mental health services they had been providing heretofore.
So we were providing adult psychiatric services, inpatient unit services, but we weren't doing any outpatient services for the community. And we found a need. We thought that there were wait lists out there and there were people and patients that weren't getting served. And AHN believed this was something that we should invest in our community and in behavioral health here in the Erie region.
And so when we talk about what it takes to kind of get this going, new buildings, new, significant capital investment, right? Talk a little bit about all that.
Absolutely. I am very impressed. We started from scratch here, and there was a significant investment in the building, and I don't want to give a number because I'm not exactly sure and I don't want it to be too high or too low, but it was a significant investment, and a lot of time, energy, and heart was put into it to make sure that it was done in a thoughtful manner and in a purposeful way. And really impressed with all the work that was done to create this program here in Erie.
Let me ask you, and maybe Dr. Manarino, you can weigh in on this as well, but are there, for lack of a better word, are there buckets or silos that each service take on? So you mentioned that that St. Vincent had been in the adult inpatient realm. What are the new services? What are the new categories of service that this new program brings online?
So I can share that. I could share a little bit. Some of it we have to kind of wait, and we'll announce in the future maybe, because I know we have a lot of things that we're preparing to announce and I'm very excited about. We are going to be opening the 24th, which is a Monday, October 24th, and we will be providing outpatient therapy to both children and adults, as well as psychiatric services for children and adults. And it's very difficult to get into a psychiatrist right now for both children and adults, and we have availability, which is huge, both for therapy as well as for psychiatric. And I'm glad to be able to offer these services to individuals that have probably either been waiting for a long period of time, or it's just the moment is right, and now you can get in directly at this moment when you need it and when you feel that you need it.
All right, Dr. Mannarino, for the layperson, define outpatient therapy vis-a-vis psychiatric therapy.
So when Nina's talking about psychiatric services, I think she's referring to services that might be provided by physicians, psychiatrists, who prescribes medicine. That's not all they do, but it's part of what they do. So for children and adults with mental health issues, sometimes medication, psychiatric medications may be appropriate. But additionally, in our new outpatient site, we'll have mental health therapists who could be a psychologist, a licensed professional counselor, a licensed clinical social worker, and so forth, who would provide psychotherapeutic interventions that might complement any medications that a child or an adult might receive. You know, I wanted to mention that this is really a timely opening. As I mentioned at the ribbon-cutting ceremony in August, you know, Americans are really beset with anxiety and depression through the pandemic. You know, increases in those disorders unlike we've ever seen. And unfortunately, going along with that is a lack of access. So people are hurting more, but having a harder time getting in for services. So hopefully with the new program, access, as Nina said, will be better.
One of the things that we have, and I don't know if this colors the conversation at all, but we talk a lot about workforce, and it makes me wonder, just like we have a teaching shortage and a nursing shortage, is there such a thing as a counselor shortage in your universe, if you will?
Yeah, sadly there is. You know, the demand is so great, and, you know, we couldn't have met the demand even with all of the providers we've had, but unfortunately, providers have left the field during this pandemic. You know, it's the great resignation, right? We've heard a lot about, well, it's happened in the mental health field as well. So shortage of providers, increased demand just results in increased wait times, and people who need care not getting it in a timely way.
Is this where, Nina, where being a part of a larger network across Western PA kind of fits in your favor, insofar as if you need a psychiatric doctor to come up from Pittsburgh, or an Erie one to go to Pittsburgh, or anywhere in between, it kind of works for y'all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our network is much broader than it would be if it was just here in Erie. We have all of age and support, clinically and medically, of course, through the Psychiatric Institute. But I will say that we do have two psychiatrists that are wonderful right here on the ground, Dr. Yang and Dr. Tung. But we can get some support if needed through Pittsburgh, but we also have individuals here that know the Erie region. So we get the best of both worlds.
Talk to me about, when we're talking about these this outpatient therapy, how much of that generally is effective as a one-on-one with a counselor, and how much of it is helpful in a group setting with peers kind of weighing in on issues and that kind of, yeah, I'm dealing with this too, blah, 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 kind of thing?
Yeah, well, you can do both. You know, individual psychotherapy can be really effective, as you suggest, but you're right. Sometimes we're able to offer groups for, let's say, kids in a certain age range or adults with certain disorders that they may have in common. And having group adults, for example, participate in a group, it provides the opportunity to you know, sort of hear what others have been through and appreciate that you're going through the same kind of thing. And that's very validating, and you don't feel like you're all alone out there. So individual therapy can be terrific, but group groups can be wonderful as well.
Is the outpatient situation, is it usually after some kind of a inpatient treatment, or can you stay in outpatient? Help me understand what would be a flow of care for someone in crisis. Maybe they present in crisis, and what would be a typical flow of care, I guess?
So, you know, they may present for outpatient, and the goal would be to help a patient to address and resolve the crisis so they wouldn't have to go to a higher level care, okay, like inpatient. On the other hand, it goes in the other direction as well. You have folks who have been inpatients because they've had an acute crisis, and now they need a step down to outpatient care to get the kinds of skills and work that will prevent a subsequent hospitalization. So honestly, it can go in either direction.
And we need to go to our break here, but when we come back, I want to talk about trauma and that impact, and the some of the conversations we've had around substance abuse, that substance abuse and mental health, behavioral health, often are severely linked. And just this idea that Erie being a resource-rich community is going to even be that more rich because we've seen this demand. I mean, Nina, you mentioned that the demand is there. The waiting lists are there, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
We are talking about the new behavioral health facility at AHN St. Vincent. Nina Ferraro, Dr. Anthony Manarino are with us here. No calls while they're on the Zoom. But let's continue on here with this facility, folks. And, the practice. So what are you adding when you've built this facility now? You said you're adding outpatient therapy and also psychiatric care. What does that look like as far as the amount of manpower that you're adding, the number of programs? Is there anything that's going to be like scheduled that somebody could register for or sign up? Talk about that a bit, Nina.
So we will have two psychiatrists right here on site. We also have hired, we have four therapists to start. And one psychologist that'll be coming on in December. So we're starting there and growing as needed from there. And we're actually in Yorktown Plaza, so we're off of 12th Street next to Panera. So we're easily accessible. And
are you in that suite there where ACL is and imaging, yes, and all that stuff? Okay.
Yeah, and it was done purposefully to kind of take that stigma away from behavioral health. It's mental health is health, and it's right next to the physical health offices as well. So it was a purposeful reason to place us here.
And it's a beautiful site. You know, often mental health services get relegated to office space that's not so great, and this is completely the contrast. It's a beautiful space. And isn't that wonderful that folks who are having mental health issues can come to a space that's going to feel relaxing and comfortable to get the care that they need?
Do you anticipate that along with maybe referral from primary care into these programs, that there would be some kind of programming? Again, I don't know if I even know what I'm supposed to be asking, but the idea that I could go and find out more about how I'm feeling, more on even on a beyond outpatient basis, but more on an educational basis. Does that happen in your world at all?
Psychoeducation does happen, and maybe somebody would want to call and just have, you know, set up an appointment and have questions about certain things. You know, we would definitely be able to talk with them and see if this is the place for them, or, you know, help to connect them to where they would get their needs met the best.
But the key is that primary care. So let's say I would imagine that you're communicating with the AHN network of primary care, saying, "Look, we've got this new capability. Make sure that you're doing your screenings to some of the, and if somebody checks off some of these boxes, you might send them our way, huh?"
Our doctors are probably happier than anybody that we started this, because they've had patients that they really were trying to get services for that they really couldn't get the services needed out in the community. So we have a long list that we're contacting now of patients and people that are in need, and we're getting them scheduled right away. So some of it is coming through our physicians and the AHN pipeline. And then we are also opening up to the community so the community can also get the services needed.
Dr. Manarino, that is astounding to me how so much even therapy drugs are being administered by primary care because you just can't get into a psychiatrist.
Yeah, that's really true. And fortunately, many primary care doctors are comfortable prescribing antidepressants or anti-anxiety agents, but not all primary care doctors feel comfortable. Plus, there are other psychotropic medications that patients might need that primary care doctors don't feel comfortable with at all. Like, for example, medication for ADHD. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Most primary care docs are not real comfortable with that. So, you know, but fortunately, we do know that the great majority of medicines for anxiety, depression, and so forth are actually prescribed by primary care physicians.
Talk about the parallels of mental health and substance abuse. If someone is presenting and they're also using, how does that work? I mean, again, primary care is able to kind of see that right away, I would think, right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of comorbidity between folks with mental health problems and substance use disorders. They do go hand in hand. And for, as you said earlier, about trauma and other issues that people face in their lives that cause mental health problems, they also can result in substance use problems as well. And so it's not uncommon at all, for example, on our inpatient unit at St. Vincent to see folks that have both, because they do go hand in hand quite often.
Do you anticipate, Nina, having one of your staff on call for the emergency department in regards to kind of like what Doc was saying? You know, there's a lot of stuff going on with this presenting patient.
So we will have a close relationship with St. Vincent Hospital and working with them in their ER department to get appointments when necessary, and our We work very closely with our psychiatric unit as well. But if an individual is presenting and they are not going to be admitted into the hospital, but they're in need of support and outpatient level of care, then we would be definitely an option for them to refer to and to support them very quickly.
All right, we've got about a minute before the bottom of the hour. I want you to go over now what the timeline looks like. Folks that are going to be interested in finding out more about it, where can they go for that data, Nina?
Great. So we are going to be opening the doors. We did the ribbon cutting in August, but we are officially hitting the ground running on Monday, October 24th. And you can call and leave a message until then, and then October 24th, the phones will be answered directly, but the number is 814-866-8484,
Wow, and so almost like an emergency kind of number, really.
Yes, it was purposeful. Sure. Everything we do is purposeful.
Sure.
So, and hopefully we're here if you need us. So give us a call and we'll be opening soon. And if you leave a message, we will get back to you quickly.
All righty. And again, the idea that two psychiatrists, four therapists, and a psychologist all coming online to start really being able to address this significant need that we have in this community here for mental health services. And it's kind of good timing. We just talked about seasonal affective. And again, I mean, there is a whole spectrum, right? From, great concern pathology to, you know what, I need a little tinkering here, or I need a little help because I'm blue, and the entire spectrum of all that. We are excited to have with us for this second portion of our conversation, Nina Ferrara, the Director of Behavioral Health with AHN St. Vincent, and Anthony Manarino, PhD, Professor and Chair and Director of the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents, the Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Institute of the Allegheny Health Network. Thank you, folks. Thank you, Nina and Dr. Manarino. I want to broaden our scope on this part of our conversation to more of a global look. And, everywhere you look, even in the journal Nature, tackling the mental health crisis in young people, that's far from a medical journal, a JAMA, or a psychiatric association journal. This narrative that there's a mental health crisis, especially in young people, is broad. Dr. Manarino, is this a lot of media hype, or is the condition real?
It's absolutely real. Both the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and the American Academy of Pediatrics has declared a mental health emergency in our country for our children. Because it is real. I mean, we have seen just dramatic increases in depression and anxiety, and worst of all, concerns about children, even younger children, engaging in self-harm, thinking about dying, attempts at suicide, and so forth, in a way we have never seen before. So it's a real issue, a real problem, dramatic increases, and a true mental health crisis for our kids and families.
What's really hitting home is we've actually seen children take their lives in Erie, and it's really unbelievable. It's like, how does this happen? You have everything to live for. Why is this happening? And so let's either myth bust or talk through some things. One of the thoughts is, well, the reason why we have higher rates of anxiety and depression is that we have higher diagnoses, that basically a lot of people, especially 20, 30, 40 years ago, went around depressed and full of anxiety, but were never diagnosed. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, it's hard to know because we don't know how much people were screened for anxiety and depression 30 or 40 years ago. There might be some validity to what you're mentioning. But on the other hand, in the last two decades, when we've measured these things better, I think it's clear that what's going on now since the start of the pandemic has clearly reflected significant increases in anxiety and depression for our kids, but also for our adults as well.
So, What is the consensus of what needs to be done to attack this? And certainly having more counselors, more psychiatrists and psychologists on call, on the job, is going to be helpful here. But what needs to be done? Is early detection a thing that we're falling down on?
Well, you know, I think we have fallen down in that domain, but for example, I think the Allegheny Health Network has made marked improvements in that regard by incorporating behavioral health consultants into primary care practices, into pediatric practices. So if a nurse or a doctor has concerns about an adult patient or a child, they can be screened immediately in a warm handoff from the doctor or nurse to the behavioral health consultant, who can then make some determination and communicate that to the child or family or the adult patient and begin some short-term services right within the primary care practice. So I think we're doing a much better job with that in the last few years compared to a decade or two ago.
Talk about social contagion. Is there more anxiety because of social media or just the coarseness of our conversations, the lack of, you know, the number of broken homes, the lack of civility in society? Is there a social contagion to this?
Well, you know, I would probably suggest that social media sometimes and what goes on in social media can exacerbate mental health conditions. But what I would say is this, you know, the pandemic has been all about uncertainty, right? I mean, right from the outset, you know, how long is it going to last? How can you contract COVID? Can you get it from touching surfaces, or it's the air that we breathe? Do you wear a mask? Do you don't wear a mask? Will schools be open or not be open? And then we open them and then they close. And right. People go back to work and then they, you know, stay at home to work. Adults are educators, parents, teachers, and employees all at the same time. And they don't know from week to week how it's going to change. So I think a big reason for all the anxiety is all the uncertainty. And even though things have improved, I think significantly in terms of the pandemic, we're better off now because of the vaccines and interventions, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, and uncertainty creates anxiety. And when things go on too long, it creates hopelessness, and that contributes to depression.
When you guys approach a person that you're working with, is it the goal to build coping skills? Talk about what you're trying to change, what kind of patterns of behavior that you're trying to change. And what I'm after, you know what I'm after. I'm trying to see if we can give parents and loved ones some tools here to both diagnose, to be able to be aware of marked changes in behavior, and things that they can do to kind of get a little help early on, to kind of nip things in the bud, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the first thing we need to do is differentiate between mild anxiety or people just being a little bit sad, which is, I think, probably been true for all of us during this pandemic, versus, you know, true anxiety condition or a true depressive disorder, which is really a marked change in mood and behavior over several weeks, if not longer. And so I think we want to help, you know, parents for children in particular, you know, recognize the difference between when it's not that big a deal versus it's more serious and their child may require professional care. And sometimes, you know, we'll evaluate a child, for example, and we'll communicate to a parent that, you know, really, I think they're doing okay. They don't need help at this point. And that's a good thing, right? Any parent would want to hear that. But on the other hand, sometimes we do find out that these kids are experiencing significant depression, anxiety, sometimes thinking about hurting themselves, and they really do need immediate care.
One of the things I've noticed in some of the children that I'm aware of is kind of the rug got thrown out from under them. Their typical course of life pre-pandemic was turned on its ear during the pandemic. So you had seniors missing prom and their senior recitals and their concerts and their basketball championships, and you never get that back. And that sense of loss seems to be one of the other contributing factors here. Like you talked about, Doc, is that that hopelessness is like, I'll never get my prom back. I didn't get to wear my dress.
Sure. You know, for those of us who haven't had those major losses where someone's died of COVID, which of course has been horrible, all of us have experienced other kinds of losses, just like you're saying, Joel, losses of anniversaries or graduations or proms, you know, seeing family members that live far away. I can tell you, I didn't see my granddaughter the first year of her life because they live in New York, and I didn't get to see her till she was one, because, you know, we couldn't mix as families at that point. They weren't in my pod, so to speak. So I think everybody's experienced those kinds of smaller losses, and that's been sad and hard for all of us, I think.
All right, how do we turn the page? So if it's significant, if they just can't seem to get out of a funk, or if you see signs of self-harm, first off, why don't you share what that might look like? Are we talking about cutting? Are we talking about too much time in their room by themselves? How about, what are some of those telltale signs?
Well, you know, children and adults certainly can reach a level of depression or despair where they're just hopeless about their life. And they just don't think it's going to change, and begin to really question whether life is worth living. In those circumstances, you know, with kids, maybe they turn to the kind of self-injurious behavior you're describing, like cutting their arms or their legs. With other folks, maybe they turn to drugs or alcohol in order to just self-medicate. So people make choices, and sometimes they're not good choices. And particularly for loved ones of those who are needing psychiatric care, you worry about what's going on, what kind of help do they need, where can we get it? You know, could my child be one of the ones that actually does try to hurt themselves? I mean, this has been a worrisome time for parents and for adult patients as well because of the struggle. And then think about it. Many patients had pre-existing mental health issues, and then the pandemic on top of it. And that's a horrible sort of double whammy to have to deal with.
There's no doubt about it. I want to kind of dive in just for a couple minutes into one of your specific specialties, and that is trauma, whether that came from some kind of domestic abuse or some other thing, maybe a poverty situation, a homelessness situation. How much is trauma and being trauma informed kind of affecting or informing all of what we're doing now in behavioral health?
So I'll share one statistic with you, and that is that 2/3 of American children have experienced at least one traumatic event by age 16. 2/3. So that's a huge number. And then you add to that, you know, all the trauma associated with the pandemic. And, you know, in the United States alone, 150,000 children before the age of 18 have lost a parent to COVID. So you've got the traumatic losses associated with the pandemic, in addition to the other traumas that you mentioned, child abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence, and so forth. All of those have been on the increase during the pandemic. So trauma has been pervasive, and it's deeply affected kids in terms of not only depression and anxiety, but potentially developing post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms just like our war veterans.
That's unreal. That to think about an 8-year-old kid trying to, you know, figure out their place in life, but also to navigate trauma. Nina, it's got to feel rewarding that your organization that you've been a part of for all these years is going to be additive in this space, I would think.
Absolutely. And that's part of why I was involved with this organization for so long, because I know that it does really put its heart, its money where its heart is. And investing in something like behavioral health here in the Erie area, because it's necessary and needed.
There's no doubt about it. All right. Let's bring this plane in for landing about 3 minutes here. I've always heard that telltale sign for a parent or a caregiver to watch out for, a teacher, a counselor, is if you've seen behavior patterns significantly change, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, yeah. That's what we're looking for first.
Absolutely.
Where's the first step? I mean, is it smart to go to primary care first and say, hey, look, can you check her out do a physical exam, but also maybe a screening here? Or is it better to kind of go directly to a telehealth situation or something like that?
Well, probably either, but I think it's great for a family when they have an ongoing relationship with a primary care doctor to go in and share their concerns with that physician or the nursing staff. And, you know, they can direct the family or the patient either to work with someone perhaps in the primary care practice, or that maybe they actually need to see a behavioral health provider.
I want to leave this on a positive note, and I'd like you to address the resiliency of our young people.
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, 2/3 of American kids have been exposed to at least one traumatic event by age 16, but 60% of those kids actually are resilient enough because of their own coping resources, the support from their family, their parents, their teachers, and others, that they never develop a mental health problem. Over 60%. So it's really a minority of kids exposed to traumatic events who develop a psychiatric problem. Unfortunately, those kids can develop serious problems, but American youth are incredibly resilient with support. They tend to bounce back, never develop a serious problem.
We're going to leave it there. We're just so grateful that you've taken the time to be with us. What a fascinating conversation. Nina Ferraro, the Director of Behavioral Health at AHN St. Vincent, and Dr. Anthony Manarino, Professor and Chair and Director of the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adults and Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Institute at Allegheny Health Network. And maybe one of the things that us parents and grandparents could do is, like, simmer down the stress level at home. Don't make it all about yourself, but consider these kids and their vulnerabilities at a tough time. Is that a bad idea?
Yeah. Not a bad idea for parents to do their own good self-care. Take care of yourself first, and then you'll be better to take care of your children. Just like on an airplane, those oxygen masks come down, they say, put it on yourself first, and then your child. That's what parents need to do. Take care of themselves, and they'll be better able to take care of their kids.
Leave it there. Thanks, Nina. Thank you, Doc. We appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on the show.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.